This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Hi, SG2 Perspectives listeners. We are trying something fun and maybe a little dangerous. On May 22nd, we're hosting a live podcast where you can join us for the recording of an episode. Our relationship right now is a little one-sided and we want to meet you. So we'll put you in my chair. You can ask us questions, share your insights, or just heckle us. There's more information in the show notes, but you do need to register so you can get a link to attend. Hope to see you there.
Overall, COVID was a pressure test for the post-acute setting that really forced these organizations to address service failures with creative measures. When we look at healthcare organizations and our post-acute networks, they had to really come together in a way that maybe they hadn't before to define those mutually beneficial solutions that decanted patients from the hospital setting, but also put those patients then in the most appropriate post-acute side of care.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host for today's episode, Jamie Zage. Today, we're going to be talking about post-acute services, knowing that post-acute is very important to the organization's system of care and also their capacity management. We've published a recent survey result and want to share some of those insights from you in terms of where those post-acute services are going and what members are grappling with today. I'm joined by my colleagues, Rachel Zirkelbach, Nikita Arora, and Garlene Sahota, all who are participating in the survey and the collection of that information from our members, but also who are working with members regularly on post-acute services as well. Let's start, Rachel, with you in setting the foundation. When we talk about post-acute at SG2, what do we mean?
If I take it to a very basic level, post-acute care encompasses the care a patient receives following an acute stay. This post-acute system is quite large and it encompasses many different sites of care. We've got home health, skilled nursing, inpatient rehab, just to name a few. Where post-acute becomes a bit muddied is that an acute stay is not always necessary to receive care. In certain instances like SNF and inpatient rehab, definitely. But in the case of home health, patients don't always have to have an acute stay to utilize home health services.
So what are some of the other misconceptions that you see when we hear questions from our clients around post-acute care?
One misconception that Nikita and I hear often is the use of home health as an umbrella for all services provided in the home. We've seen the pandemic really forced folks to look at their sites of care and care delivery in the home. Within SG2's forecast, we define home health as a combination of two procedures. So that's home nurse visits, which is exactly that, nurse visits in the home, and home visits other, which encompasses this other bucket that includes services being provided in the home by providers other than the nurse, including but not limited to home health aides, clinical social workers, or certified nursing assistants who work in the home. When you couple home health with a digital platform, it serves as a foundation for service expansion into care in the home. Care at home includes four different subsets of care. We've got on-demand care, where you might think labs and urgent care at home. We've got chronic care at home, which an example there would be primary care or dialysis. We've got acute care at home, which has been really popular in the headlines with hospital at home programming. And then we have continuing care at home, which would be your SNF and your rehab.
And Rachel, there's another misconception that we often hear, and that's that we assume that PAC is only for elderly individuals or those who require long-term care. PAC is provided to all individuals who undergo acute illness, surgery, or require additional support and rehab to get to that full recovery. There are a number of different services that fall under post-acute care and that overarching umbrella, but it often gets synonymized with SNF services. The choice of setting really depends on the patient's needs, preferences, and the level of care that they're going to require.
That's a great level setting for us all. With that background on what post-acute is and what care at home is and where the overlap is, let's focus for a moment on that post-acute survey that we published earlier this year. What are the big themes coming out of the responses that we received?
We're excited to share some really great data from the survey where a number of macro trends emerged. A few we will touch on today center around addressing capacity issues, workforce constraints, and reframing partnerships. And these are all woven together via micro themes like technological advancements and augmentation of services. We'll start with the theme of capacity. Members are looking to eliminate capacity issues and provide better access through optimal post-acute care placement and enhance quality. In the survey data, when asked about key priorities for a post-acute care strategy, 70% of respondents reported seamless transitions of care as a priority. Additionally, 40% reported facilitating patient triage to the most appropriate post-acute care setting as a priority. Now, in terms of what members are currently doing to address post-acute care transitions, 90% of survey respondents said that they are having case managers plan for discharge upon admission. 53% of members said that they have site-specific program liaisons who help place patients into the most appropriate post-acute site of care. And lastly, wraparound services such as home care aides and transportation were also stated as necessary services for successful transitions to the post-acute setting.
That's really important because knowing with the inpatient capacity issues, being able to move those patients through. And so it's good to see that some of those tried and true processes are still in place. The post-acute capacity challenges in the latter part of the pandemic still were causing some of the major issues there as well. Let's focus on the workforce piece for a moment because that is part of the post-acute capacity challenge. Any updates on the workforce situation for post-acute?
Capacity constraints are being felt across the industry, and no surprise that the PAC world is also being impacted by that. In a similar vein, another theme that we saw circulating within our survey report revolved around workforce, and that mainly looks at the staffing shortages that we've seen among RNs and CNAs. They've really forced PAC providers out of markets, or at times even inhibited the ability to take on as many patients as they may have been able to prior to the pandemic. The question then begs of what are we seeing done about this? Our PAC survey found that 55% of members were reporting educating their PAC teams as a way to address some of these workforce challenges that are coming up. SNFs are finding themselves with more and more complex patients, which really necessitates a higher level of care delivery, and in turn really lends itself to the need to elevate workforce training and properly handle these increasingly complex services and get providers to work top of license in order to care for these high acuity patients. A few examples from the survey include respondents sharing that they're providing training for specialty services, including dialysis and tracheostomies, just a lot of movement in the education and training space that'll help mitigate some of those workforce challenges. That's one front of what the workforce is facing right now. We also see a little bit of a bottleneck in the flow of internal workforce operations and daily functions, the interoperability and the ability to appropriately provide care virtually or via telehealth services. Within the survey, we actually saw 61% reporting EHR interoperability as a problem, while 75% reported a lack of virtual and telehealth visits. In an attempt to address these challenges, we've seen some members add software to their EHRs that sends real-time alerts when patients are in or out of a hospital, ED, or a post-acute site, while others use telehealth to fill some of the workforce gaps, connecting with specialists and other providers when they couldn't be on-site in the SNF, for an example.
Nikita's last point about telehealth utilization segues nicely into the third theme that we saw come out throughout the survey, which is that of partnerships, the connection via telehealth to better utilize the workforce. But I also see a lot of these macro themes and micro themes interwoven into each other because I looked at the use of telehealth as a way for organizations to utilize their partnerships in a way that they changed post-pandemic because it allowed both organizations to maximize those limited resources to provide patient care. Overall, COVID was a pressure test for the post-acute setting that really forced these organizations to address service failures with creative challenges, with creative measures. When we look at healthcare organizations and our post-acute networks, they had to really come together in a way that maybe they hadn't before to define those mutually beneficial solutions that decanted patients from the hospital setting, but also put those patients then in the most appropriate post-acute site of care. There were two examples of this that came up quite frequently throughout multiple answers throughout the survey. The first example focused in on care transitions. Pre-pandemic, there were care transition protocols. This pandemic situation forced folks to look at those care transitions and make sure that the hospital was on the same page with the post-acute setting and they were transitioning patients to the right care setting at the right time and in the right manner. And we saw this theme come throughout the partnerships that they really were working as one unit to develop these mutually beneficial care transition protocols. Another popular response was that healthcare organizations actually supplied providers to their post-acute networks where applicable. They effectively plugged holes in those PAC networks by providing these clinicians so that in case of a SNF, they could serve those patients. They didn't have to close down a unit due to staffing constraints.
There have been some policy updates regarding the workforce situation. Last September, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, through CMS, issued a proposed rule to establish comprehensive staffing requirements for nursing homes, and this includes a national minimum nurse staffing standard. One of the proposed requirements calls for 24/7 RN coverage, and the intention of this proposed rule is to promote safety and quality. However, the staffing shortage is already particularly evident among RNs as post-acute care providers struggle to attract them, as they often have more flexible schedules in acute care and other settings. New nurses are not entering the field at the same rate as retirement age nurses are exiting the workforce. Therefore, this proposed rule will present challenges in the post-acute landscape, as many post-acute care providers have already left the market due to staffing shortages. In the survey, about 50% of respondents said that post-acute care providers leaving the market is a recent trend that impacts the availability of partners. So there's been some adverse reaction to this rule, as many believe that there's a need for more permanent workforce solutions rather than staffing mandates. In regard to emerging solutions, these can be highly variable by region, but ultimately, in an attempt to solve the workforce issue, hospitals and post-acute care providers are working together to alleviate burdens. Some health systems have developed new clinical education programs on topics that their post-acute care partners have requested for staff. Some health systems have also been sending their clinicians to care for their patients at post-acute facilities to supplement the facility staffing. This can also enhance clinical decision-making and therefore reduce admissions and complications. And lastly, organizations have also stressed that it's important to provide opportunities for growth for post-acute care staff to enhance recruitment and retention.
So it's a lot of the same solutions we see across the board, but it's applying them specifically to the skilled nursing. And I believe I've even seen some of those stories related to home health as well, and having those home health nurses. You've touched on the technology aspect as well and the importance of telehealth. That's another evolving space. Are there any upcoming changes we should be aware of in the context of post-acute service delivery?
At this point, technology plays such a huge role in the continuity of care, in PAC, and overall outcomes. And we've seen a continued advancement and integration from our members. So whatever is happening in this space moving forward is going to greatly influence the post-acute care delivery. From our survey, we're seeing about 39% of respondents supported efforts to extend virtual consults with providers as a way to overcome any access and capacity issues. And this usage of telehealth really enables virtual consultations, follow-ups, and therapy sessions, and often connecting patients and providers to specialists when in-person visits are not necessarily possible or an option. Remote monitoring devices such as wearables, sensors, smart home technologies can also track vital signs and activity levels, medication adherence, as well as providing valuable data for healthcare providers to monitor patients' progress and intervene when necessary, and even allow for the identification of service gaps and inequities that may be coming up. Another use of remote patient monitoring involves falls, which are a significant concern in the post-acute care space, especially for older adults. Fall detection and prevention systems utilize those same sensors, wearable devices, and AI algorithms to monitor patient movements and detect potential falls. These systems can also alert caregivers and providers to enable timely interventions and reduce any risk of fall-related injuries.
It speaks again to the interwoven themes that we saw throughout the PAC survey. I would even nod that to a partnership. We've seen so much in the way of headlines about hospital at home. Specifically, I'll call out MassGen and their relationship with Best Buy's Current Health. You have MassGen, who's providing this high quality clinical care, and they've uniquely partnered with a giant tech retailer who can go into a patient's home and focus on what they do best. They use the Geek Squad to set patients up with remote patient monitoring.
We've talked a lot about what's changing and how organizations have been adapting and doubling down on these transitions of care. Let's talk a little bit about the future and the forecast. We've recently completed the 2024 Impact to Change forecast work. What's the biggest impact factor that's reflected in the forecast? Based on all the trends that we've been talking about, which one has the greatest impact in the forecast?
There's not just one impact factor that greatly impacted this iteration of the forecast, but there were two: policy and system of care. We have quite a few policies that impact care delivery in the post-acute setting, not only in the home, but in places like skilled nursing facilities as well. From the system of care perspective, we see consumers who want to receive care in the home and payers who want to shift that care delivery to lower cost sites of care. Those are the two most predominant impact factors that we forecasted in this iteration.
You made a great point on the system of care front, how the demand from payers is going to help shift procedures out of the inpatient setting and into alternative sites of care, whether that's SNF, whether that's the home, wherever that may go. On the policy front, we're seeing the Impact Act come into play, as well as some of the nurse staffing ratio regulations that may come into play, and that'll actually influence a lot of the activity that we're going to see in terms of staffing for SNFs, as well as staffing availability for home nurse visits.
I love that you brought up the inpatient to outpatient shift, because with that shift, we are seeing folks who previously may have had an inpatient procedure that now that procedure is happening on the outpatient side. So now they don't actually qualify for a skilled nursing stay. It's not only procedural volume that's impacting the hospital organizations that we talk with. The downstream trickle of that is also affecting our post-acute care networks too.
What are some of the key strategies you suggest organizations consider in either managing or working with post-acute providers?
I'm sure you are tired of hearing me say it at this point, but I would advise that folks continue assessing their partnerships between their organization and their post-acute care network. We saw 14% of survey respondents report that establishing some sort of bed lease agreement to secure access to post-acute beds was something that they were working on post-pandemic. It's still shining through in conversations that I'm having with members. I was on a call recently with a hospital who's taking this bed lease agreement idea one step further with a SNF in their region. This hospital and the SNF have a partnership where the SNF will accept and transfer prior authorization pending Medicare patients, providing care for the patient in the SNF setting while waiting on the prior authorization to be finalized. So even before they know that the patient is going to be approved for a SNF stay, the hospital transfers this patient into this specific SNF if the patient chooses that SNF. If the SNF stay is declined, the hospital is the one that pays the SNF for the stay, and then the SNF begins the discharge planning process. This is a win-win-win for providers and patients alike in three different ways. It discharges the patient from the hospital, affording the hospital some capacity and cost savings. It creates a revenue and a patient stream for the skilled nursing facility, and then it allows for a quicker hospital discharge for the patient when they're ready to be discharged. That only contributes to better health outcomes and less chance for illness exposure.
Establishing clear communication channels will be a key strategy when managing or working with post-acute care providers, as there will be inherent challenges of communicating across diverse teams and different care environments. And insufficient communication strategies can often be the underlying reason for patient safety errors. To overcome these communication challenges, organizations can establish regular meetings, both in-person and virtual, to discuss patient care plans, goals, and any necessary updates. Particularly, this will be key for high-risk cases. Organizations should also ensure that their communication strategy allows for real-time communication, some sort of central pathway for real-time updates between post-acute care facilities and providers will be key. Also, organizations should ensure that contact information for key personnel is readily available to facilitate communication during care transitions or in case of emergencies. Ultimately, clear and timely communication will prevent medical errors and improve patient outcomes.
One final suggestion would be to effectively work towards your care coordination and that smooth transition between acute care and post-acute settings. It's really going to be crucial for optimal patient outcomes, focusing on investing in and building out infrastructure to support that interoperability across EHRs and transitions of care by developing standardized processes to help with care transitions, including exchanging of medical information, any medication reconciliation, as well as any follow-up plans, and then assigning a dedicated care coordinator or transition manager to help facilitate the communication and really ensure that seamless transition of care.
Those are some great insights. And the other thing that I would advocate for is when you're doing your strategic planning and planning for the capacity that you need to capture the growth that you want on the inpatient side or even the ambulatory side, is to also make sure that you're planning in the post-acute space as well, so that you've got alignment of all those resources. Just like you want to make sure you've got the front end physician office capacity, you need to have the back end post-acute capacity as well to achieve your overall systemic care goals. That's going to be key moving forward. I want to thank Nikita and Rachel and Gerleen for joining me today. This has been some great in-depth insights into what's happening in the post-acute world and how we can continue to move forward in driving some growth in our systems of care. Thank you to our listeners for joining me again on SG2 Perspectives.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to SG2 Perspectives. As always, I really value your feedback, input, comments, or ideas for episodes, and you can reach us at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Additionally, I recommend that you check out some of the other Vizient podcasts, which cover a range of clinical and operational areas. Those can all be found at vizientinc.com/podcasts.